CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain. Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. On the Scream Therapy podcast, we talk about how punk rock is a positive force in people's lives. Not only an outlet for expressing ourselves, but also a place of solace. Harry Bailey of UK queercore duo Death Goals has a slightly different take. Harry says being in a punk band has been the best and worst thing for their mental health. The rigors of touring. The crippling anxiety that creeps up when they aren't taking care of themselves. These are only a couple of the worst parts of being in a punk band. Despite those dark moments, Harry says Death Goals has always been a source of joy, a way to work through feelings of anxiety, existential dread, and gender dysphoria. It's nice to know that the negative aspects of punk always seem to be outweighed by the positive. Ultimately, it's what we love. It's what keeps us here.
I'm Harry Bailey. My pronouns are they, them. I play in the UK queercore duo Death Goals. I have done since 2017, which is coming up to quite a long time. A main focus of our writing has been mental health and our own mental health and the sort of ebbs and flows of that. We've sort of tied in our own queer identity within the last few albums, and that's become more prevalent, as has widening our scope to being less insular and more outwards looking and looking at global effects of mental health crises and the effects of like how genocide might affect your mental health and all of that, the ongoing slop that social media throws at you and the ongoing atrocities that are constantly portrayed and thrown at you. Death Goals has been the best and worst thing for my mental health. The ability to use it as a tool of expression and work through feelings of like grief when my grandparents died, or just general social angst and worry, has been like invaluable. Now, Death Goals has also been the source of many of my worst meltdowns and insecurities getting the worst of me. I have a terrible case of imposter syndrome, constantly comparing myself to friends, especially on the release of our second album, which took me to a really dark place where now my relationship with that whole album, which is an album people really like, is quite skewed because I just spent so much of it panicked and worrying and diving into the worst parts of the internet, seeking out terrible reviews and people's worst opinions on us and really like sitting on that. So that's not a great thing, but I think Death Goals brings a lot of joy to people. It's brought a lot of joy to me, and that's our main focus. We want to be this beacon for joy in a world which is not very joyful.
A lot of people that come on the podcast, I would say the majority of them, talk about how punk rock is such a great tool of expression and that creative flow, and really using it for therapy and for, you know, also a place of solace and a place of growth. So to hear you saying that it's kind of the dichotomy between the best thing and the worst thing is fairly new to me. You know, I can see that for sure in my own history with punk rock. It can be very self-defeatist, self-destructive. I would hope that you come out with more than gets taken.
Oh, 100%.
To hear you talk about those insecurities and even like searching out the reviews and stuff, how does that feel to be pushed and pulled like that with the band?
It's not great. I did some like CBT therapy and that was really helpful. I've always had a bit of it's what me and my mum call my Nate complex, because I watched the Foo Fighters documentary and Nate Mendel was like, well, I'm just Nate. I'm here, like, I just play the bass. And I've always had that sort of thing where, like, well, I'm just Harry. I'm just here, and, like, my issues matter less than other people's, and my struggles matter less. So I often just go quite quiet and insular when I'm struggling with something. So that builds, and I think a lot of the stuff with Death Goals, especially, is that I care and I want it to be good, and I want us to be the best band we can be and to create the best art we can. But in doing so, I push myself too hard, as I think many artists do, or musicians, or whatever you want to call us. I think artist sounds a bit wanky sometimes, but it is what we are. And that can have negative repercussions. And also, like, touring, like, just does the worst damage on a human being I've ever known. The tour we just did with Stormo, we did like a 3-week European tour, and it was amazing. But, like, I'd say 80% of that tour was utterly miserable. And not for lack of, like, the people we were touring with, they were lovely. Like, it's just the grind of it, like, it gets to you. I try not to drink on tour, really, and, like, I don't really smoke or, like, have any of that stuff. You do end up being quite in your own head. Everyone's either asleep or whatever in the car or whatever, and, you know, you're driving for 8 hours. It does not do the mind very good. And I think anyone who is a real road dog and loves going out, they must either have like a brain like an iron trap and like they really know what they're doing, or they're like a masochist. I love it, and I love playing shows. Like, I get so much energy and joy from playing shows. Like, I never want to not tour, but like, I'm learning, I've had to learn how to look after myself and those things so I don't end up in these spirals and then lose the fun of it.
I heard someone say touring is 24 hours a day work for 2 hours a day of fun.
It genuinely is, though. Like, my brother, whenever I go on tour, I'm sort of like, oh, we went here. He's like, oh, cool, did you see anywhere? I'm like, no. I saw an industrial estate of this place, and I saw, like, the parking lot of this place, and then we were in the venue, and then there was nowhere near around, so we stayed at the venue, which feels like you're, like, trapped, because you can't really, you don't know anywhere, you don't want to explore anywhere in case you get lost. It's been good practice touring as much as we have. I'm learning a lot more processes of, like, cool, I am going to take, like, 10 minutes to go for a walk, or like, I'm going to become less reliant on like people in that way of like, if I don't have someone around me to give me something to do, I feel a bit useless. Finding my own purpose, and like, I've got into reading again, because that just gives me like something to focus on that isn't music, or isn't just like, oh, when do we sound check, when does this happen? Like, it's like, cool, I'm just gonna take myself off and read for a bit. That's been really good for my brain. I think it is crazy. You see some bands like Hearst Collective.
This is so much fun. It's for the trannies, by the way. No one else. Let the trans woman stand alive! It's the hardest thing to do! I'm trying to keep a crime! If I can't stay alive for myself, I'll try to do it for...
They tour like no band I've ever known. It was really interesting talking to Jenna about it, but like, how do you even just, I wouldn't even know how to go about that. Jenna was like, we just kind of do it now. It's kind of just our normals. That's just terrifying. That's just like a whole other mindset.
Getting back to what you're talking about with getting on stage and releasing those demons or whatever. I think people see bands that, you know, are really giving it and, you know, you've got tons of energy on stage. You know, people are screaming. And they say, oh, that's really cool. But I think that A lot of people that are up there doing that, I know for me in the past, I'd gone up and it was scary. It was a chance to kind of let out that stuff that you wouldn't necessarily want to let out in your daily life. And even just the screaming, that process of screaming inside your head is less about posturing and being cool and more about a chance to really work out these demons.
Oh
There's
yeah,
internal struggle there that we maybe don't see as an
a
audience.
100%. I don't really even scream with like a proper technique. I'm just yelling. I'm quite a cheery, polite person in my day to day and stuff. So it's quite nice to have that like outlet. And there is a power, I think, in being like the power of a microphone. It does allow you the opportunity and the privilege to speak and release things. It feels okay to sort of say things that you maybe you've had bottled up, or like feelings you've been feeling, or like things that have been upsetting you. Like, I think a lot of stuff comes out at Death Goals shows, and I don't plan anything that I'm going to say, but like it's the truth and it's what I'm feeling at that moment. And I think Death Goals has always been a very shooting from the hip, spur of the moment band, especially within what I'm playing. Like, I do a lot of changing the music and improvising and like just changing how songs are, because I enjoy that expression and like that ability to be like, before this song, I'm saying this, but also I want to say this, and I've got that I want to say. These are things that have been weighing on me and I feel like are important. So like, I mean, at recent shows, I've been doing a lot of talking about like the UK hardcore scene and issues that are going on in that. Like, I think that's a really important thing for me to talk about at shows. I think the general politics of the UK currently, and it's sort of leading into fascism, very important for me to talk about, like queerness and our identity and how our shows are for people and safe spaces. Like, that is stuff that is integral to me to speak about and stuff that is in the back of my head. So I'm like, cool, I have a microphone. People have to hear what I'm saying. It's amplified. They haven't got the choice. So I'm just going to talk.
Yeah.
And if they don't want to hear it, they can go outside for a bit. But for the most part, people don't tend to leave.
I was watching this video of you playing, and there is these guys that were in the pit, and they're doing like the whole gorilla, like karate thing. And this one person was just, I know that dance is for the most part, quote unquote, safe. But it was funny because you said something like, "How about some more of that?" like you're kind of joking about, like let's go even harder. And then you got into the down onto the floor, and I was like, "Oh, I don't know," because obviously you guys are very open about being queer, and you talk about queer politics and queer issues. And a little twig inside my brain was like, "How is this gonna go?" But then the guy like came and gave you a big hug, and I was like, "Yes, punk rock."
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate that we've never really had any issues with being vocally queer and expressing our queerness at shows. We're very fortunate. I know there are many other bands who have not had that experience, and we'd like to make our shows welcoming to those people and have that communication. If you want to start yelling at us about something, yell. I'll have a conversation with you. But if you become hateful, you'll be asked to leave or whatever. I've got real issues with like the crowd killing stuff. I don't mind it, but once people start like swinging fists at each other, I have a real issue, and I've stopped shows and I've like cut that shit out. I don't want that at our shows. I got knocked out quite a while ago now, but at a punk show, whilst at like a hardcore show at the very back of the room. It's a dangerous thing, which I know is entrenched into the scene, and there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I need to defend my right to crowd kill, and I need to defend my right to be able to do this sort of stuff. But like, you're more often find those guys are large, muscular, cis white men who have had the absolute run of the space. You can give up posturing and hitting people for two songs and let someone else take up the space. Hardcore is so, the gatekeeping is still very real, and it's getting, the walls are going up again as like the walls came down with like Knock Loose and Turnstile getting so big. Had a massive influx of people, and now I think a lot of people within the hardcore scene are quite determined to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, but I really don't believe in that. I think hardcore and punk and this should be for everyone. It isn't for someone. They'll leave of their own accord. But if you get them in, that's just more people enjoying this really cool music in this scene and joining in the politics. I think that's the most important thing. So have a spin kick, have a dance, like shake your ass, do whatever you want to do, but like do it safely. Be aware of your surroundings. That's like the main thing. Everyone is welcome at Death Girl's show. And like we have some like trans women who go unbelievably hard at our shows. It's awesome. Joining in with the crowd has always been a massively important thing to me. Like I love that interaction, making people feel like they're involved at a show. Like bands thinking they're too cool and being like, I'm on the stage, I'm not going to look or talk to the audience. Like, I love that. Making eye contact, like, I used to do musical theatre, so I think that's where that comes from. I want to be engaged with you. I want to see that you're enjoying that and, like, picking up on that stuff and, like, seeing someone falls down and, like, checking them, like, you're all right. Like, it can reaffirm someone and make someone just feel much more welcome at that show, and I want that more than anything.
It's nice to know that you've not had any horrible experiences, because you know you're right, I've heard about some bands who are openly queer, bands with trans people in them, having a lot of issues with total ignorance from people at shows.
Yeah,
but how does it feel to know that that could happen at any time and you are being very vulnerable by putting yourself out there?
It's me and George are very privileged. We are for the most part cis presenting masculine white people. We can hide our queerness if need be. If we've truly felt unsafe, as like, so when we first toured Poland, I was like, I'm not going to do my usual makeup. I'm not going to wear my little shorts. I'm going to wear long sleeve and black jeans and try and look as like metal dude as possible. I didn't need to do that in the end, which is fine. But if I was a trans woman and my identity and my entire being is kept up by the identity I choose and wish to be portrayed as, you're not going to be able to hide that, and you don't need to hide that. Same if you're a person of color, you can't hide that, and they are the people who are more at risk. So I can't really speak like, oh, I feel I'm in danger, because realistically in the grand scheme of the world, I'm not. I can hide it so much better than other people in my friendships, in my scene, in on lineups that we are a part of. So if anything, I'm more focused on them. And if they're safe and if they're having a good time, if they feel like they're being looked after and represented properly, I'm very fortunate. And we use our platform, and we try to use our platform in that way of making sure everyone on a lineup is safe and everyone in a room is safe. It's a thing in my head. Like we played in Bratislava, and that's right on the border of Hungary. And I was like, I don't know how that's going to go. And they were really accommodating and lovely. Like, even though the fascism and the right-wing politics are massively on the rise and they're becoming far more vocal and they are becoming more clearly a part of our day-to-day life, as horrifying as that is, they are still currently, especially within the punk scene, in the minority. And I haven't had any run-ins, really. There was one run-in in our hometown of, like, a Nazi showed up and he very swiftly got sent on his way, which was great. And, like, yeah, we're very fortunate. We've never had a run-in, but yeah, it's in the back of your mind, but once again, I'm privileged in that way that I've got a lot of societal advantages that some haven't.
What would you say is your biggest mental health challenge?
General, just anxiety. I get quite caught up in my own head. My brother's just been diagnosed with ADHD. My mum's definitely got ADHD. I've got some form, some flavour of it going on there, so a lack of routine and a lack of organization tends to send me absolutely wild. And then I'm quite keen to sort of eradicate that. So I've got plans. I have lists that I use. And general just anxiety. I'm not very kind to myself. I'm getting better at that. Being kinder to myself when I don't need to be is cruel.
Yeah, I'm right there with you with the ADHD, and add bipolar to the mix and these things can become perfect storms. But like you said, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, the CBT.
That really helped. Like, that was the sort of thing I always sort of, not wrote off, but I was like, once again, this is my sort of insecurity and my sort of inferiority thing of being like, someone else needs that more than me. My problems are so minor. I don't really need that. But then, like, I did it for maybe like a month, and that it helped so much, just giving me like systems in which to sort of counteract my brain sort of patterns and things that I would like latch onto, or like just like really stupid stuff. But like, it's not stupid. It is equally an issue that was causing me stress and distress. So I'm glad I did it. Like, if you can get therapy, even if it's like, even like a free therapy, like it really does help. It did me a load of good. I know so many people who have benefited from all kinds of therapy, and seek out therapy. If you can, seek it out. It's great.
So survivor's guilt is a big thing. You hinted at that, and I feel like that a lot too. But the way that I feel also is that if I wasn't taking care of myself, or I wasn't accessing, you know, if there's always that other person out there that deserves it more than I, then what kind of effect would I have on the world? Because I would just be kind of, you know, huddled in bed all day, and I wouldn't actually be doing things like putting on shows, being in bands.
Yeah,
of course. Far-reaching effects of that.
And also my, like, anxieties and things were affecting my relationship with, like, my partner, my bandmate and stuff. Like, I was just, like, Gollum, like, just whispering to myself constantly, like, and I hate you, and everything's awful, and, like, you're an idiot, and no one ever loves you. Like, it's so, like, it's just classic anxious spiraling and worrying and like whirlwind stuff. It's really helped. I might not be the most brilliant songwriter in the world, but I'm a really nice person, and I'm a good friend, and like I'm really good at like talking to people at the merch stand, which George hates doing, so I can take that, and I have that role, and like finding those things that I can do that I excel in, and really taking pride in those things has become a massive thing for me, of like, oh, you're not being like taking up space and being obnoxious because you're good at something. You are celebrating yourself. Little reminders that you're worth something.
Survival is an act of defiance. That's the title of the newest release.
Yeah. The existence of queer people and the simple act of being alive and being permitted to be alive is not a privilege we are given. It is a privilege that is constantly being threatened. I just saw that apparently Trump's looking to reverse gay marriage, apparently, that's been put forward, which is, once again, just terrifying. There's a song on the EP which is about the sort of infighting of the queer community and, like, cis white gays sort of not wanting to fight for their trans siblings because they've done their fighting and stuff and being like, oh, well, we're fine, we've got our rights now. Like, they're coming for all of us. They're not just going for trans people or immigrants. They are coming for everyone. So be on your guard. Survival and our existence is an act of defiance in itself. We will always be here. We've always been here. There is no doubt about that in my mind. But as we exist, we have to defy everything and defy everyone.
I believe most punks are very fearless people. And that comes with being open with
massively
mental health issues. And out of all the people that have been on this podcast, you're episode 120.
Ah, awesome.
Which is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
But out of all those people, I think I've only had maybe a couple who have said, no, I don't want to do that. And that's obviously their choice. But, you know, 118 out of 120 have been super open about it. And I think that comes back to punks being fearless and being
absolutely
wanting to put themselves out there, which I wish we could all do that in a certain extent.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Fearless is a really good term for it. Fearless in their politics, fearless in what they stand by and their beliefs. I think it's an amazing thing to be able to do. Something I've definitely taken on from being within a punk, alt, hardcore scene is that ability to be truly yourself and stick by what you know to be yourself and your truth, whether that being queer or straight edge or just being like, man, I just really love like thrash metal. And you're like, cool, that's awesome. Like that authenticity and that belief in yourself and your identity is gorgeous. I think that's one of the coolest things about this sort of scene and this sort of music is that the authenticity of it and the truth that people perform and inhabit. It's really clear when someone isn't that. I think that's one of the, me and George have gotten very good at spotting those people and being like, okay, that seems more like an act than that's quite a lot of posturing. I'm like, cool, but what's really going on to them? The people who do like bear it all like are fascinating. Fascinating and gorgeous people.
Even a worm can turn.
That was my conversation with Harry Bailey of Death Goals, deathgoals.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Clahoman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
This is Bird Note.
Join us now for another Brooklyn ball game. This is the old redhead, Red Barber.
Longtime Brooklyn Dodger and later New York Yankee announcer Red Barber grew up in Mississippi and was known for his folksy way of speaking.
They call him the Big Cat, and he swings that heavy bat as though it weighed no more than a dry turkey feather.
One of his best-known catchphrases was that a player in a winning position was sitting in the catbird seat.
Delivers outside for ball three, and it's 3-0. Fry sitting up there in the catbird seat.
But what is a catbird seat? And what, for that matter, is a catbird? Well, the catbird part is easy. It's a cousin of the mockingbird in the bird family known as the mimids. And it does sound a little like a cat. As for the saying, it's been around since the 19th century, probably originating in the southern U.S., where there are lots of gray catbirds. The bird is normally a skulker, foraging near the ground or in dense underbrush. But during the breeding season, gray catbirds sometimes fight amongst themselves for the best territories. As part of the competition, the two combatants sing their way to higher and higher perches. The one who finally takes the highest perch is, well, sitting in the catbird seat, with the best view, in control, top bird, so to speak. So take it from Red Barber. The catbird seat is the place to be. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF would come into its own as a serious platform for independent artists and a forum for people to express ideas not present in the mainstream media. Summer 2002, CJSF receives a license from the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission to broadcast over the FM airwaves. February 13th, 2003, 7 p.m. CJSF goes on air at 90.1 FM, and we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.